John Bachelor. This is the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. Brazil, the natural catastrophe of the flooding in Rio Grande do Sul, the southernmost state of Brazil, now visits itself upon the world because the crop is damaged, very badly damaged. So are the livestock and the farming. This is a heavily agricultural state, southernmost, and the flooding has ebbed, but not so much that we can't see that the cleanup looks impossible. Professor, I just note this because in the coming weeks, we're going to see more evidence. Not only did Brazil get badly damaged by those rains, there's an article about Argentina being hit all badly as well. They've got to sell their crop as fast as possible, soy crop. So soy, and I understand rice dominates the economy of Rio Grande do Sul. And then I saw a photograph in Reuters of what looked to be hundreds of vehicles underwater, buried underwater. So they've lost an enormous amount of transportation facility, and along with the homes and the cities of this country. Your measure, you're reading these things now. Is Brazil set back? Is this a blow to the whole economy and Lula da Silva's governance?
Well, John, Brazil is a very big country. I mean, certainly there is a hit to the agricultural sector in Brazil, given that Rio Grande do Sul, which is essentially in the southernmost point of Brazil where it borders Uruguay, it accounts for something like 24% of the nation's pork production, 16% of the nation's poultry production, among other things. And so there have been, as I understand, significant losses of pigs and chickens, and significant losses of other crops. However, in the larger context of things, that will be, again, the Brazilian economy accounts for literally, half of the economy of all South America. Brazil is a really big place. So certainly it's not good news for Lula. And there's evidence that the amount that will have to be spent just to clean up this tragedy, they're estimating at a low point, something like $3.7 billion. Part of that's already been allocated, but it could be double or triple of that based on the indirect economic damages. But as you also point out, this is something whereas Rio do Grande do Sul was the kind of the epicenter of these record floodings. That whole area has gotten a pretty significant amount of sustained rain. And so Uruguay has also gotten a lot of rain. Certain portions of the north of, or I should say the center of Argentina in that same area has gotten a lot of rain. And so, as you pointed out, that same agricultural area that affects Brazil also has affected the Argentine and other crops. But again, it's a tragedy of enormous proportions. Brazil is also a country of enormous proportions. And so I suspect that as with other things, they will work through this very tragic situation.
We don't know if these rains are in any fashion connected to the concern about climate change. We just don't know it. We note it, however, because it is not uncommon to see natural catastrophes damage the economies of agricultural-based countries such as South America. I remember in recent memory, Chile's been damaged. I believe it was a drought or a wildfire, or maybe both. The Amazon's been damaged by a drought. Panama's been damaged by a drought. So we're just citing these things as unusual. I'm told that Rio Grande do Sul, in recorded time, had never experienced a flooding like this, but we'll see going forward. We move to Mexico because this is a man-made dispute. It has to do with trade. And there are countries in Latin America, I believe Colombia is one of them, who are now entertaining tariffs comparable to or perhaps in the wake of the tariffs that the Biden administration has announced on Chinese green technology. Net zero is the ambition. Green tech is the methodology. And then there are the Chinese who manufacture with heavily subsidized direction and then dump products. It's called manufacturing overcapacity. That's the polite way of saying they dump products on the world, undermine the indigenous industry, and damage in general the balance of payments, in addition to what China does with the money back home, which is build up a larger and larger military machine. So, Professor, BYD aims to build a factory in Mexico. When last we left this melodrama, that was okay with AMLO. There's an imminent election. Sheinbaum is well in the lead, the pick of Morena Party. But now Mexico, I understand, is going to have a dispute with its neighbors. How is this going to work? If the BYD can't come to America, can they go to the rest of the Americas?
It's a great point, John, and this ties together a number of things, as you've alluded to. And so, number one, as China has engaged Latin America, the lure is the benefits that supposed Chinese loans and investments would provide the region. But as you also point out, China's pattern has traditionally been trying to buy the commodities of the region at the lowest possible price point, selling it back at advanced products, and essentially reaping all of that value added in the good jobs and technical growth for itself. And indeed, in engaging in such a way that tends to actually deindustrialize its partners, even while it's seeming to provide benefit from loans and other things. And so one of those areas certainly is things like processed steel as well as processed soybeans. I remember the Argentines for, as far back as 2010, we're putting all kinds of tariffs on Chinese products because of dumping. There's a couple of related but separate industries that are involved in this right now. So number one is that China, which accounts for half of the world's steel production, because the Chinese economy, as we've seen, has slowed, and China is not exporting steel products to the rest of the world as aggressively as before. It has, as you alluded to, this vast overcapacity, and it's so. Taking advantage of the fact that it has this enormous subsidized steel industry, it's now selling steel at far below market prices, which has led the U.S. and Europe, but also now Chile and Brazil and Mexico to all increase tariffs on Chinese steel. However, apart from the issue of steel, you also have the question of Chinese advance in higher tech industries. And so the big one that's getting a lot of focus right now is the electric vehicle industry. And so we used to talk a lot about Tesla and Elon Musk, but just a couple of months ago, you saw the Chinese producer BYD, which again has been, the Chinese EV industry has been subsidized for over 14 years now. Again, they have the advantage of relatively less expensive and lesser environmental standards, safety standards, cheaper labor, government subsidies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, oftentimes robbed or appropriated technology. BYD is so cost competitive right now that, for example, its low-end, one of its low-end vehicles called the Seagull, sells for $12,000, which is literally one-third of the cheapest of its competitors. And so it's no surprise that BYD has already made enormous inroads into the European market, and the worry is that it could go into the U.S. market as well. And so the concern for the United States is that at a time when we as a government are subsidizing the move towards green energy, that if we continue those U.S. government subsidies, we would essentially be subsidizing the takeover of the strategic industry and transferring that money into the hands of Chinese companies like BYD. And so, again, the U.S. has dramatically increased its EV its EV tariffs from 27% to now 102%. The Europeans are thinking about raising their tariffs by 15% to 35% and may go as high as 55% tariffs. Part of the issue is how do you essentially keep this strategic U.S. industry alive while you hope to get competitiveness up? And that also applies not just to EVs itself, but there's been increase in tariffs on the lithium batteries that go into this, as well as other areas where the Chinese have a leg up, such as photovoltaic panels and other issues. But the other issue that you also rightfully alluded to is that because a lot of car production for the U.S. and Canadian market occurs in Mexico under what used to be NAFTA is now USMCA. There's now concern that as BYD and other Chinese companies move into Mexico to establish themselves as legally Mexican entities to preserve that access to the U.S. market, that this could represent a new type of threat. And so recently it was announced that the BYD will begin producing a electric truck called the Shark someplace in the center of Mexico, a pretty big factory employing 150,000 people. But certainly the Biden administration is looking, in addition to the tariffs on EVs direct entry, of how do you work with the Mexican government, with the likely incoming Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, who, again, is very sophisticated in terms of environmental and technical issues, so that we can collaborate with Mexico so that Mexico, in the pursuit of its own economic interests, does not facilitate the backdoor entry of Chinese car companies and Chinese cars into the U.S. market. And so that's an issue that's just beginning to, I think, emerge as we move into not only a Mexican electoral season, but of course, in November, a U.S. electoral season.
Do we have any indication about Claudia Sheinbaum? Is because she's about to be elected president of Mexico. AMLO, the grandfatherly figure, never showed one way or another how he is with China's manufacturing overcapacity. Has Sheinbaum evidenced concern not with BYD coming to America, that's the word leakage that the White House has used. BYD is to sell in Mexico, and we can presume it's going to sell in Colombia, in Brazil, in Argentina. Is that a concern for them, or are they absent an EV economy, so it's no threat?
Well, indeed, in Brazil, BYD has actually already set up a major factory in a place that the U.S. producer Ford actually pulled out of because they felt that they couldn't make any money there. But with respect to Sheinbaum, again, and the polls are suggesting that she's polling about 49% right now. Her closest competitor, Xochitl Galvez, is about 28%. And the third place candidate, Jorge Alvarez Mayanes, is only at about 10%. So unless things change dramatically, she will win on the June 2nd election. She hasn't spoken a lot about China policy, but by inference, knowing that she is very technologically savvy and environmentally savvy. Indeed, they actually just had a debate, the last debate of the Mexican presidential season, in which there was a lot of mudslinging about the supposed pact of Moreno with the narcos, especially the Sinaloa cartel, but very little on concrete policies such as China. But it certainly appears that Sheinbaum will be open to continuing to work with the U.S. and trying to facilitate Mexico as a place that is a platform for production. Even in previous debates, talking about continuing to invest in patio space and warehousing space to facilitate more companies basically coming in to set up shop for production for that North American market. And of course, the fact that she is again very outspoken on supporting the green energy transition, that will open up more doors for China, not only in terms of electric vehicles, but possibly with the position in lithium that the Chinese company Ganfeng has in Bacanora, as well as the position that Chinese company Zuma Energy already has across Mexico and in other areas. And so indirectly, her position on the maquiladora sector and in green energy can, as well as her kind of sophistication on issues of international trade relations, could open up doors, but probably in a way that will, also be accompanied by a constructive dialogue with the U.S. on these issues. At least that's the hope at this point.
Elections in Central America, in the Caribbean, and the darkness visible in the Central America when we return. Professor Evan Ellis, this is the New World Report. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.